It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a record number of brick-and-mortar stores closed this year across the country, including Wisconsin's own Book World and Bon-Ton. But consumer confidence is at a 17-year high. We'll break down what these trends might mean for the economy and the future of retail. First, when Republican lawmakers passed their tax overhaul bill this month, they included a repeal of the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare. The mandate has been controversial in some circles, but supporters say that the individual mandate brought costs down and worry that its repeal could dismantle the Health Care Act as a whole. But those fears might be unfounded. New analysis shows the repeal of the individual mandate might not be the ACA death blow many people feared. Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's also the author of the book Obamacare Wars. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here, Judith. Thanks.
So just briefly, Phil, can you refresh our listeners on what the individual mandate was and why it was seen as controversial?
Sure. So the individual mandate was a part of the ACA that said that if you didn't have insurance from your employer or you didn't have it in some other way, you had to purchase insurance on a marketplace created by the ACA. And then if you didn't, you would have a penalty, something around $695 for every uninsured adult that doesn't buy insurance. And the reason that existed was that in the past, when state governments had tried to expand access to insurance through sort of expanding access to the individual market, what they found was that the people who tended to sign up were the people who really needed health care now, people who were sick. Healthy people didn't sign up, and this led premiums to explode, and insurance markets weren't stable. And so what the individual mandate was supposed to do was to bring premiums on insurance down by balancing out that risk pool, providing some incentive, right, the idea that you'd have to pay a penalty, and the idea was to bring young and healthy people into the market.
I'm guessing that that penalty, if you did not buy insurance, was still quite a bit less expensive than if people were buying into the marketplace. So was that actually enough to create that kind of buffer?
Yeah, this is one of the major, the funny thing is the politics of the individual mandate were sort of toxic. It was the least popular provision of the entire ACA. It was kind of one of the things that initially sparked a Supreme Court battle over the ACA. So it's not really popular. The irony of that is it probably was not hefty enough to induce people to buy insurance. It was especially when compared to how some people might think about how expensive premiums are in some markets, that penalty might have not seemed like that much money. And so a recent study in the Journal of Health Economics that's come out has suggested that, you know, when you look at why people got coverage, that the real thing that explains why people got coverage is, you know, either they found out they were newly eligible for subsidies under the ACA and that those subsidies were generous, or they were eligible for some other part of the ACA, like the Medicaid expansion. But this study seems to suggest that the size of the penalty really didn't matter as much, that there wasn't a sort of compliance effect, that people were worried that they were going to get punished if they didn't pay the penalty.
So GOP lawmakers tried a few times this year to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act without success, but then they were able to roll this repeal of the individual mandate into the tax bill. Was that a surprise to anyone?
No, I think that the thing that made the attempts to repeal and replace the ACA so toxic earlier in the year was that Republicans, you know, naturally included provisions in those repeal plans that seemed to create opportunities to take away things like protections for people with pre-existing conditions and subsidies to purchase insurance. and repealed the individual mandate as well, but also took away a lot of the popular parts of the ACA that people liked. And so it's not surprising to me that, you know, in this sort of omnibus do-or-die moment for Republicans, that they would include a kind of, a way of fulfilling their promise to repeal some major part of the ACA in that law.
So the individual mandate was touted by a lot of supporters of Obamacare as really a linchpin part of it. We just saw a shortened enrollment period for the ACA, but it seems like numbers were good. How would you assess the recent enrollment period that just ended a couple weeks ago?
I mean, I think that one thing that seems to be clear is that over the last year, the threat of the ACA potentially going away has had a kind of maybe the reverse effect of what Republicans might have intended. The threat of the ACA going away, I think, has in part led more people to learn about what benefits they're in fact eligible for. Right? Are you eligible for premium tax credits to help you purchase health insurance? Are you eligible for Medicaid? And so, it's not surprising to me that people have that the threat of that has not, in fact, led people to stop enrolling, but enrollment has sort of continued apace. I wouldn't suggest that enrollment has somehow like gotten better as a result of kind of repeal being on the table. But I think that as people find out about the benefits that they're eligible for, and the ACA, I think initially didn't necessarily do as good a job as it could have about telling people, what are the benefits that you can get, once people learn about them, they might be more likely to sign up.
Phil Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University, and he's the author of the book Obamacare Wars. We're talking about the repeal of the individual mandate that is part of the new tax plan. And what are we hearing, Phil, from the health care or the health insurance industries with the repeal of the individual mandate?
Well, I think that there's sort of been mixed signals from what I've observed. I think there are some insurers, at least I read in the Journal Sentinel today, that there are some insurers who are suggesting that the repeal of the individual mandate won't have much of an effect on premiums, that the marketplaces are going to look somewhat like they've looked in the past. Now, the usual source of information for this kind of question is the Congressional Budget Office. And the Congressional Budget Office tries to forecast what the effects of policy changes on the ACA are going to be. And in the past, the CBO had projected that repealing the individual mandate would, by 2027, lead to 13 million fewer people with insurance. But recently, the CBO has begun to sort of reevaluate whether or not its forecasts were including some of the right variables, and so there's some uncertainty about whether or not that many people would lose insurance, whether or not premiums would go up as much as they had anticipated. But I would note that I think we don't have a very clear sense of just how many people would opt not to sign up for the ACA if individual mandate didn't exist, right? We know that the individual mandate hasn't been especially effective at getting people to sign up, that people signed up for many other reasons. But if you take it away, right, it might still be the case that people don't sign up, and that in some marketplaces, this makes the risk pool a lot sicker, a lot worse off, and insurers raise premiums. The American Academy of Actuaries, which is a big professional association who study these kinds of things, have still suggested that eliminating the individual mandate would lead to premium increases. But the point is, I think that we're in a condition where we don't really know how bad it would be.
So, Phil, as we start to wrap up, it seems like the stick in the form of the penalty for not signing up for insurance has not been particularly effective. That seems to indicate that maybe it's time to look for some really juicy carrots that will encourage people. Knowing what we know about the American healthcare consumers, what do you think would entice them to opt for healthcare coverage?
Well, I think that looking at the people that we want to bring into the marketplace, young, healthy people into the marketplace, you know, we need to look at the kinds of benefits that those people want when they're signing up for health insurance coverage, right? Whether or not that's sort of generous subsidies, depending on the area that they're living in, but also benefits that, you know, advantage them for living a healthy lifestyle and things like that. But there might be benefit packages that we haven't necessarily thought about as enticing to those people. But I do think that the really important thing to keep in mind here is that the generosity of the benefits that people experience as a result of getting the ACA is something that really matters for whether or not people sign up.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Great to be here.
Philip Rocco is an assistant professor of political science at Marquette University. He's also the author of the book Obamacare Wars. He joined us to talk about the repeal of the ACA's individual mandate via the tax bill and why it might have less of an impact on the healthcare law than previously expected. Coming up, consumer confidence is high, but the fate of brick-and-mortar stores is uncertain. We'll take a look at what these trends and factors might mean for the economy. Stay with us here on Central Time.